Greater Santon and beyond. Get ready for the Santon Times Hour.
With your host,
Alexander.
From the heart of Santon to the rest of the world, this is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and is always available on all good podcast platforms. I'm Alexander Leitner. This is edition 107. We're into week 12. And in case you weren't sure, it's March 2023. If you want to get in touch, you can email editor@santontimes.co.za or connect with us on social media at Santon Times and visit the website www.santontimes.co.za. As always, you can send through your questions, your comments, your feedback, your thoughts. You are always part of this conversation and I love hearing from you. If you're listening across Gauteng, South Africa or somewhere else in the world, both on radio or as a podcast community, I'm happy to report that all is well in Santon land for another week. And Vincenzo, behind the control desk again, thank you so much for coming in. I know it's a bit of a longish weekend, so it's a bit of an odd start to the week. And yeah, it's Human Rights Day week. So if you're celebrating Human Rights Day or taking the weekend off or the day off, that's what we're marking in South Africa this week. If you're listening live on Mix 93.8 and not on the podcast, don't forget the WhatsApp line is open on 0848220938, 0848220938. And yeah, how did your week kick off? How did you get through the national shutdown today? I'd like to hear from you. Did it move the needle? What was your experience? Use the WhatsApp line, use the social media accounts. It'd be great to get your feedback, some of your thoughts, your input on what's been a highly anticipated protest, action, however you want to call it. Quick rundown of the week. I marked 10 years since climbing Kilimanjaro for the second time this week. Quite unbelievable how time has flown. 2013, I went up with a bunch of media colleagues up Kilimanjaro, the highest freestanding mountain in the world. And we all got to the top. We all summited, which is also quite a rare occurrence. You do hear people getting up in groups, but not all of them. And what an experience it was. One thing I can tell you, one quick takeaway, because I could probably talk about this for an hour, but I won't. One quick takeaway, if you're African, if you're South African, if you're on the continent, it's one thing you should put on your bucket list. Climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. Do it properly. Do it wisely. It's not for the faint-hearted. It looks easier than it is. It's quite a tough week, let me tell you. But it is so worth it. It is such an experience, and you just feel so part of Africa and the continent once you've done it. It's just, I don't know, it's an undescribable feeling, an undescribable experience. And it was the 10-year anniversary this year and just brought back so many memories and so many feelings. Then there's a new car brand coming to South Africa, and I had a sneak preview of this brand this past week. They had a couple of demos to show us, and all will be revealed in the next few weeks, and I'll share that with you as well. And then I had a very nice luncheon with the team of Air France KLM at the Old Ducky Cafe in Four Ways, and I'll be hopefully getting an interview with the country manager to chat about their 70th year of flying to Johannesburg. Can you believe it? 70 years of flying in and out of Johannesburg. Then Binance, the cryptocurrency trading platform, they brought together some of their users and stakeholders for a meetup at The Roof in Bryanston. If you haven't been to this venue, The Roof in Bryanston, actually fantastic. It's just there next to the Santon Clinic, and you have the most incredible views of the Santon skyline. And the food's great. I must tell you, the food was very good. And they do some really nice cocktails as well, so go check that out. And then, of course, my mom, she celebrated her birthday this week. So one more time, happy birthday. Mom, you're the best. And may you have many, many, many more happy years, health, wealth, and all those good things. I love you lots. Coming up on this week's show, it's been a tough training environment for most businesses and especially for restaurants. I catch up with one of the most prominent voices in hospitality to get a sense from her how the sector is coping. Then she started her own vegan alternatives range, and now, with a healthy cash injection from a venture capital fund, she's teamed up with Southern Africa's biggest food producers to take it to the next level. Next, hot on the heels of this week's protests and our general concerns of where South Africa is going, online registration for the 2024 elections has opened, and I'll be getting all the details on that, so stay tuned. And finally, as dating apps and ways to meet people has exploded online, a concerning new crime trend has been flagged by the LGBTQ plus community in Greater Sandton, and I'll be bringing you all the details on that coming up shortly. Well, headlines are up in a minute, but what would a longish weekend be without a bit of music?
Show some love.
Subscribe. Share.
Leave a review and rating for the Sandton Times Hour
on your favorite podcast app now.
You're listening to the Sandton Times Hour.
This is the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 with Easy Love by Sigala, easing us into the week and the headlines for this week. Well, the Belgium royal family are coming to South Africa. Yeah, King Philip and Queen Matilda will be having their first ever state visit to our shores. And that takes place from March 22 to 27 and includes a series of business and government meetings, as well as cultural exchanges and tours of the country's many landmarks. So you're going to be hearing from the Belgian royal family in the coming week. Then the proudly South African flagship event, the annual Buy Local Summit and Expo, will be celebrating its 11th edition in 2023 and will be running from the 27th to the 28th of March at the Sandton Convention Centre. And attendance to the event is free and aims to encourage us all to buy local products and support local businesses. And I think this is a very exciting initiative. We should all be buying more local products. And there are some fantastic local products. Sometimes we don't even know that these products are local. You know, we don't really look at the label. We don't look where it's made. And we punch so above our weight in so many sectors and so many industries. I think sometimes we take it for granted. And let's also not forget that apart from the jobs conversation, which we tend to have a lot, let's not get too hung up about creating jobs. Let's get excited about creating more entrepreneurs and more business owners. South Africa needs more business owners and more entrepreneurs, because those are the ones who will create more jobs. And talking about business owners and entrepreneurs, I came across this great quote, which I thought was very interesting. Customers will sooner become your friends than your friends becoming your customers. And I thought that is very, very true. Because often we have friends who start businesses, and I think for the most, a lot of people don't necessarily go flooding to support their friends, but there are ways that you can support a friend if they have started a small business. And I encourage you to do these things. You can go onto social media, share some of their posts on social media. You don't know who's in your network that might find their products interesting or useful. Like their posts. Tag other friends who might want to know about these products. Comment and say something nice, something encouraging. You don't know what it means to somebody who's starting a small business or is starting out on their own. Comment with an emoji. Post a picture. Maybe you've bought their product and you want to give it a little bit of a thumbs up. Take a picture of the product, post it on social media, give them a shout out, and of course, leave a review on Google Reviews or any of the other review platforms, and be honest about it, be transparent about it. But I think give your friends as much support as possible. And the great thing about all these things is it's not going to cost you a cent. So that's some great ways of supporting small businesses. And of course, go out and try and buy local, because the more we support local products, the more it helps our economy, it helps our communities, our neighborhoods. Such a worthwhile experience. Then the Mall of Africa and Sandton City in Joburg, as well as the Cape Town V&A Waterfront, had the best December this past year. The best. And that's according to a MoneyWeb article. December and November were record trading months for Sandton City, with double-digit growth. Along similar lines, Business Day reports that the foot count at the shopping centres of High Prop Investments, which includes Rosebank Mall and Hyde Park Corner, well, that foot count is returning to pre-pandemic levels, while people are spending more when they head out. So that's some good news in these generally dark times that we've been having, where we are seeing a lot of businesses struggle at least people are kind of getting back in there and supporting businesses. Let's leave the headlines right there for this week. The restaurant industry emerged from the pandemic limping and has been flung from the frying pan into the fire as load shedding adds to tough economic trading conditions. Grace Harding is the CEO of Ocean Basket Group, and she catches up with me for an update on the state of trade right after the break.
The latest news.
The biggest names.
The best destinations.
The hottest entertainment. This is the Santon Times Hour. The best of Santon and beyond.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour.
It's the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good podcast platforms. And as we kick off this week's edition, well, it's a bit of a weird week because we've got sort of a public holiday in the middle of it. I'm joined by Grace Harding, the CEO of Ocean Basket Group, who's been very busy during COVID, doing her bit for her company, but also doing her bit for the industry. And she's gone from one interesting pandemic into a whole different set of challenges. And I actually caught one of her posts on LinkedIn. We're connected on LinkedIn. And she was talking about some of the new challenges the restaurant industry faces. So I thought, well, let's get her on. Let's have a chat about it. And Grace, I think the last time I saw you in person, we were running around in Durban and I was looking after Naomi Campbell at an event. But that's a whole nother conversation for a whole nother day. Can you believe it?
I can't.
So, Grace, tell me, how are things going in the restaurant business? It must be so challenging having to deal with rising input costs of food and products. Then you've got load shedding coming out of a pandemic. I mean, just paint us a picture.
You know, a lot of people have been asking me this, and I'm starting to feel like I'm sounding negative, and I don't want to sound negative. So let me paint a picture of what's happening, and then let's talk about how we deal with it. So what's happening to the restaurant industry is the same as what's happening to any industry, from electricity problems to input cost problems and the whole value chain being impacted. I mean, we have no railroads in South Africa, which increases the price of getting goods to places. Then there's potholes because there's too many trucks. The consumer is so under pressure. Not only is she under pressure financially, but I think there's a new pandemic that's arisen, and that is anxiety and depression. And that brings a whole new spin on things, because if one little thing is wrong in a restaurant, or if the food's just a little cold, the impact on the people is huge. So our staff now need new skills. They need to learn how to deal with angrier people than ever before. So when you sit and unravel it practically and emotionally, it becomes quite a ball of wool that has to be handled and knitted together.
Sure. Well, Grace, listen, I can identify with that. I mean, I've been in situations where, you know, you go into a store and something isn't working, and isn't working for the 10th or 20th time. And it's not a matter of raising your voice or, you know, being difficult, but saying to them, listen, you know, we need to deal with this. And as I think often when you're in business, you naturally gravitate towards wanting to sort things out. And some random guy came up to me and says to me, you know what, just leave it. And I was like, what do you mean just leave it? How do you mean just leave it? I said, like, every time I come here, I have the same problem. And surely, like, somebody needs to take this up the food chain and sort it out. So we don't all have to stand here for 30 minutes in a queue waiting to get our groceries paid. And he was like, no, just leave it. And I feel like we've gotten to a point as well where, on the one hand, it's become a little bit of an offense to be to kind of call out change and to make things better. And also, like, this attitude of just leaving things has kind of almost just got us to where we are right now.
Oh, you know, is it a lot of apathy? I mean, why isn't there a huge uprising? I mean, we've had uprisings before for good reason in this country. You know, is it time for another one for other good reasons? But I think that people are truly fatigued. You know, things happen to product. The load shedding has definitely affected the cold chain. It's affected production. So there isn't enough electricity, let's say, to do a final coating on a product. And that does leave the product to be not as great as it was before. There's aggravation. And I think on the staff side, they can't explain it anymore. And the customer doesn't care. And she shouldn't. It's not her problem. So I think everyone's just fed up with it. And this is the way it is. And I was saying to someone else a few weeks ago, I've started saying to my colleagues, let's pretend that we only started working this year. So we've woken up to this world, and this is the only world we know. And let's try and deal with it in that way. Otherwise, we are dealing with it with a lens of, it's so bad. Why is it like this? How are we going to fix it? But I empathize with staff. They are fatigued, absolutely fatigued. In our industry, can you imagine no salaries for 2 years? Then we come back. Then there's no electricity. Then there's fewer customers because they're under pressure. Then the customers are angry. So I have a lot of sympathy and empathy for the guest and for our own people in the restaurants.
Well, you went out and created the Restaurant Collective. I think this was also as a result of some of the challenges you faced during lockdown. How has that now evolved since then? I mean, now facing the new challenges that we're all facing on a daily basis, how has that call, that rally call that you put together, how has that kind of moved forward?
It's been really interesting. Restaurateurs, and I'm talking about the individual restaurateurs, they'll sort of come together when there's a real crisis. So we found that once sort of COVID was letting up, it was more difficult to get people together. But we're back on the game now. We've appointed someone to run the Restaurant Collective full time. Most of the bigger restaurant groups have joined. They're paying membership fees. Even some of the smaller guys have joined. David Higgs and his group have joined, and Signature and Tasha's. Obviously, I started the Restaurant Collective with Natasha. So we're back on track. We're going to do some work on electricity, which is another huge minefield in terms of not only not having electricity, but understanding how to work with electricity, because we've never had these problems before. So we haven't thought about our equipment and really thought about, should we switch it on so early in the morning? Can we save electricity? How do we monitor the electricity consumption? So now we're dealing with new problems, and that will make things more efficient. That will hopefully save some money on the income statement. So the Restaurant Collective is building up strongly again. We're helping deal with a ZEP permit drama, doing some other work on bargaining council stuff. So it's a really needed thing. I mean, every industry has representation, and we've always been really fragmented. I think it's just because the restaurant industry wasn't built by big corporates. It started off 1111. Even if you look at Spur and Steers, those amazing brands, they started in the 60s, which is not that long ago, and they started as individual restaurants. So now it's about bringing the big guys together to help the small guys, because those are the ones who have no one to speak to. The pizzeria down the road, the little pub, your favorite Portuguese restaurant. Who supports them? It's really difficult.
I mean, you're one of the CEOs that tends to be in the media quite a bit. You do, you know, do a lot for your industry. And I think in terms of business as a whole, sort of being a voice for business on a day-to-day basis, where often we feel like business is actually quite quiet about a lot of these issues. Are you hoping that more business leaders come to the party and start sort of airing their concerns in their own sectors or in their own sort of industries?
I think we have to. It's not only about airing our concerns. We have to air our concerns and then get together and try and change things and come up with ideas. And I also empathize with other CEOs, because the stress of day-to-day dealing with your own life, public companies, you know, sometimes I open my mouth and I think, oh my gosh, should I not have? So you've also got to be careful how you do things. You have to be responsible, but we have to stand up. At the end of the day, we're running South Africa, aren't we? Who's keeping the wheels turning of this country? We are worrying about our staff, making sure they have medical, making sure they're emotionally fine. I mean, we spend money every month on free mental health for staff. So we're keeping these wheels turning. We have to stand up, and we have to stand up with positive and constructive intent. And I can understand why people don't, but look what happened in the Sunday Times. I mean, big up to those big guys. And the Business Day obviously gave them airtime. I mean, these are big, big businesses. And I found it very encouraging. You know, I thought, oh, I'm going to like jump on their backs. I felt like a little ant on the back of these huge, animals in the wild. And it was very encouraging. So yes, we must do more of it. And I think we must also get together across sectors. You know, we don't need all the hospitality people together and all these people together and all those people together. I think we should all get together and come up with ideas.
Well, if you want to get together, this is the lady to reach out to, Grace Harding. She's the CEO of Ocean Basket Group. Taking on a whole new wave of challenges, almost like a bit of a tsunami of challenges at the moment in South Africa. But like she says, it's about getting together, it's about finding solutions, and about not just airing your concerns, but also trying to come up with a plan to manage these issues. It's the bottom of the hour, and we're going to take a quick musical break and more of the Santon Times Hour right after this.
More? The Santon Times Hour continues.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 with Trezor and Beatenberg and a great track, Zambezi. Actually heading up there end of April up to the Zambezi. There's lots happening in Livingstone and that Victoria Falls area. So I'm hoping to be bringing you some interesting stories coming from that part of the world. Loads of investments. Loads happening in hospitality and tourism there. So I'm really excited to bring you more from there. Taking you into the second half of the Santon Times Hour, my name is Alexander Leipner. And if you're new to the show and you're not quite sure how this works, well, if there's anything that sounded good during the show and you want to get some more information, you didn't get all the details, you can go onto the show notes for this edition on www.santontimes.co.za and you can get a detailed breakdown of everything discussed on this week's edition. Phone numbers, email addresses, websites, you know, names of people. If there's something that sounded interesting, you'll get it there. Also, be sure to check out the social media accounts at Santon Times and feel free to engage. You can send a tweet, a WhatsApp, a DM, a voice note, an email, whatever works for you. And you can also use the hashtag Santon Times Hour. Now, this week, I was out and about again and met the founder of Herbivore Earth Foods, Chanel Grantham. And this was during a launch of a new facility at the Tiger Brands head office. Always ready for an interview, I sat her down to chat about her vegan food business that went from a small enterprise to now being distributed across the country. And I asked her how she got started.
We started Herbivore about 8 years ago, and it really started out of a passion for wanting to make plant-based foods more accessible and affordable for South Africans. My personal journey, I suffered from asthma since I was a child. And when I went plant-based, my asthma completely went away. So it was just realizing the benefits of a plant-based diet, but also feeling frustrated at the time that there was not many options available. So I think this is really at the core of Herbivore, is that we're wanting to make plant-based accessible, make plant-based affordable, and make it delicious. And what we've realized is that we're wanting to go into the plant-based alternative space, which makes makes it easy for people to transition to incorporating more plant-based foods by creating foods that we've grown to love as South Africans, like your boerewors, your burger. So we've got like a product that we call a herbivore burger. And our products are very, very meat-like. Cook has the same texture, bleeds like a burger, but made with beetroot. That gives it the bloodiness, because we feel that we're just wanting to make it easier for consumers to make more conscious food decisions.
Paint me a picture of what it looked like when you started off on your vegan and sort of plant-based journey. What did that look like in your kitchen? How did you get going? What ingredients did you use?
I think, to be honest, and still to this day, keep it so simple. I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions about plant-based, is that it's a mission to go plant-based. And it's actually very, very simple. It's just going back to foods that are from the ground and making simple swaps. So whatever I was used to cooking, just simply swapping it out with a plant-based herbivore product and incorporating more whole foods into your diet. But keeping it simple, keeping it so simple, I think that's the key.
So what's the transition from producing small-scale, a meal at a time, plant-based meals, to scaling it to a national level where you're having to worry about supply chains, cold chains, packaging, sell-by dates? Is there a compromise? Is there a tweak? How do you manage all of that?
That's a great question. And I think that, you know, like all startups, there's, you know, the production challenges. And I think we've definitely learned as we've gone along. And that's part of the, you know, product development process. But at the same time, we've always kept quality at the forefront. So that for us is key. And I think that always keeping in mind that at the end of the day, it's about creating a product that's high quality, that's nutritious, tasty, and affordable.
What does the herbivore range consist of at the moment? I mean, if I walk into a store right now and I had to pick out some things, what can I get? Well, how much of my usual meals can I replace with a plant-based alternative?
So we've got quite a wide variety of products. We've got our meat alternatives. We've got burgers and sausages, nuggets. And then we've got our dairy alternatives. So we've got a range of plant-based milks, yogurts, desserts, custard. And then we've also got a confectionery range as well. So we've got a wide basket of goods. And again, our focus has always been to make plant-based accessible for consumers. And we feel that by having a wide basket of goods allows us to offer that to customers.
The best of talk and music in 1 hour. This is the Santon Times Hour.
Well, a change of pace as we always do at this time of the hour. And I don't know if you know this, but voter registration is open for the 2024 general elections. And I know it's something that people do think about quite regularly. And then sometimes we forget about it. But I must be quite honest, I actually didn't know that the voter registration had opened already. But to get some more details on this, so we don't get it completely wrong, and we're also going to put up all the details up on the website. So if you miss anything in the next couple of minutes in terms of this conversation, don't worry. Just go on to the santontimes.co.za today. We'll put all the details up there. But joining me to fill me in on all the details is Granville Abrams. He's the Senior Manager for Electoral Matters at the Electoral Commission of South Africa. And Granville, maybe just take us through this current voter registration drive. Where's it happening? Who's it happening for? How do people get involved?
Thanks a lot for the opportunity. First of all, let me just mention that voter registration has always been a continuous process.
Okay.
However, when we said continuous, we meant our offices are always open. But since 2021, we also went online, moving along with the times. And in preparation for the 21 local government election, listeners may recall that we did have online voter registration then already, and it's always been open. But since we're now into election season, we've gone into a heightened alert just to make voters aware of the fact that we open for business, and it's election season, basically.
And it's a bit of a staggered process. I know that you kind of are focusing on different segments. I know when I chatted to the team at the IEC offices, there was a conversation that you were looking at the student bodies or people who were 18 and upwards. Then you were looking at running a program specifically for matriculants or people who are leaving school. So I'm assuming there's sort of a phased approach to this as we run up to the elections next year.
Yeah, no, this is very important. If you have South Africans who are 40 years and older, who have not registered as yet, then it means that we didn't get them when they were young. They didn't just arrive as 40-year-olds. So this is something that's progressive. And within the category for the youth, anything between 16 and 25, because you can register if you're 16 years old, however, you can only vote when you are 18 years old. We have a big gap there. And the reason being because most of these voters would obviously be your first-time voters. So you would, first of all, need to make people aware of the fact of what a democracy is, what an election is, what it requires to participate. And it is for that reason why it's always a challenge amongst the youth. But we hope that with the online self-registration platform that we are specifically talking to that sector, and that is where we can make the biggest inroads. If I look at in preparation for the 2021 election, we had about close to 8 million people between the age of 16 to 25 who were not registered to vote. So they could not vote because they weren't even registered. So it's a massive gap. The gap between those who are eligible as South African citizens and those who are actually registered is also continuing to widen. Currently, we have about 17 million South Africans who are eligible to vote, but but who have not registered. And if we compare this to voter turnout in the last election, the number is actually much bigger, just of those who are not even registered, not even counting those who are registered and didn't vote.
So Granville, let's actually go through those numbers, because I think they actually are quite telling, and they will also lead us to the question as to why do people actually need to vote. But if we look at the last numbers of the last election, right? So I've got a couple of numbers here. Correct me as we go along. I've got 26.7 million odd, rounded up, people who were registered to vote, of which 17.6 million actually ended up voting, which is almost 10 million short of the amount of people that were actually able to vote but decided not to vote.
Now, that's correct. The actual percentage of those who turned out was below 50%. I think the figure that I'm looking at currently is that it was just over 12 million people that came to vote out of the 26 million. So on the voters' roll, there were already 14 million people that didn't vote. And then add to that the 16 million people that didn't register. So there was about 30 million South Africans that could have participated, but did not participate in the last election. And that's quite telling.
Sure. And if I've got my numbers right, I think the current population of South Africa is somewhere in the region of 60 million people. So what we're saying is that 17.6 million people who actually did turn out to vote in whatever form they voted determined the next 4 years of 60 million South Africans. So it's essentially a fragment of society that is essentially steering the direction or the course of where the country is going.
That is correct. Whilst internationally, you know, there is a decline, but I think we are still a young democracy, and I don't think that we can be compared to that. In fact, in South Africa, I would think that being a young democracy, the challenges that we have, and also the slow progress that we have, we probably have more reason to participate than to withdraw.
Why is it important for people to vote? I know there's probably going to be a lot of these conversations happening over the next couple of months in terms of voter education, in terms of encouraging people to register to vote. But a lot of people will say, you know, I'm not voting anymore because, you know, my vote doesn't count, or it's not going to make a difference. Or, I mean, there's tons of excuses that we all hear, you know, in one way or another. But from your perspective, why is it important that people execute their democratic right to put a tick box wherever they think it's right?
Well, first and foremost, let me just correct the perception out there. Your vote, in fact, does matter. For national and provincial elections, we essentially have a proportional representation system. So each and every vote counts. Secondly, as we have just gone through the number crunching, we have mentioned that there was about 30 million South Africans that could vote that actually didn't vote. And the outcome of this election in local government was determined by about 12 million people. So the majority of people did not vote. So that correction. I look at the current challenges that we have, and I look at the decisions that are being made. And as South Africans, we need to realize that if we are not part of that decisions-making process, or if we do not participate in the election of those who make the decisions, at the end of the day, those decisions are still being made for us. I'm just thinking about myself, and I'm thinking about the kids that are my kids. And I say to them, you know, we are making decisions now as a country that you are going to have to live with for the rest of your life. And as South Africans, it's everybody's duty to participate. Now, a lot of people would say, no, but I'm not political. And we need to draw a distinction between the politics of parties, political parties, and the politics of democracy. Being a responsible citizen and taking part in the decision-making of your communities and of your country and of your future.
Well, I think that's a very good point to leave it at. Granville Abrahams, Senior Manager for Electoral Matters at the IEC, also known as the Electoral Commission of South Africa, talking about the current voter registration drive that is, I think, reaching a hot point at the moment. I mean, as I say, it's on all the time, but it is now coming into sharp focus as we lead up to 2024. And an important reminder, just to talk about why we have a democracy and why we have these channels that we can actually exercise our rights and our views, and how important it is that we do make use of those channels to determine where we're going and where also the future of our kids and everyone else coming after us is going. We're going to take a quick musical break and more of the Santa Times right after this. And yeah, stay tuned.
Online, on air,
anywhere, anytime.
This is the Santon Times Hour.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good podcast platforms. And that was Lionel Richie with All Night Long, the Mood Funk remix. I actually heard that this week and I thought, well, let me just slip that in there because it's sort of a semi-long weekend and, you know, I suppose it kind of sets the mood a bit. I thought this is a very interesting story that came across my desk and it's probably not the normal sort of light, easy stuff that we talk about, but I think it's quite important nonetheless. And it's got to do with dating apps and general apps that connect people. And this specific app is very unique to the LGBTQ plus community. And to talk to us about what's happening with these apps and what's happening with people on these apps, I'm joined by Lerato Palacacele. He is the human rights manager at Out LGBT Wellbeing. And Lerato, maybe in your own words, you can maybe just take us through what is this trend that you've picked up on, that you've sent an alert out on?
So this trend is has been going on for quite longer than we thought, actually. So we initially thought it's been going on for months. But when we opened up our organization to start taking in reports, we picked up that this has been happening for about 2 years. It just started out slowly and in Gauteng, mostly in Joburg, in the Joburg North areas, but it has really spread out. I was in PE this week and there were three guys who also reported similar incidents that happened. So what happens is there's a group of guys, actually groups. We initially thought it was a gang, but it's a couple of groups of guys who lure in their victims on these apps. It was initially only on Grindr, what we picked up, but it's also on Tinder. But the targeted people are usually gay, bisexual, and transgender men. They lure them in and then they kidnap them. They take their bank cards and whatever belongings, money they might have. Sometimes they take their cars. And sometimes it's extortion where these perpetrators or these people will come to the person's place of work or their place of residence to demand more money. So it's different gangs committing different kind of crimes, but it's mostly money involved or where these people just want to get something out of it.
Well, you're saying it's targeting the LGBTQ plus community specifically. How do you differentiate between it being a normal crime in terms of just affecting anybody at random and it potentially honing in on this particular community for whatever reason? And what is that reason?
So with the LGBT community is a bit more vulnerable than the mainstream or maybe let's say the general population in the sense that a lot of guys who are gay or a lot of women who might be lesbian are usually in the closet, meaning that they do not disclose their sexual orientation or gender identity, which makes them vulnerable on dating apps because they're easier to manipulate or to lure into a corner or a private space where you can easily take advantage of them. So their vulnerability is what is being used against them here. So it's easy for them to say, let's meet at my place or let's meet at your place where it's a bit more out of the public. So a lot of people use that, a lot of perpetrators or scammers use that to their advantage. They know that this group of people are vulnerable. They are more likely to agree to meeting in private and not wanting people to see them. So they are easier to target.
So you're saying it's sort of like a double layer of vulnerability there. Apart from the usual sort of issues, you've also got sort of the embarrassment factor or the sort of secrecy factor that comes into it as well, which just makes the whole thing more complicated.
Absolutely.
This has been quite prevalent in Northern Johannesburg, so Greater Sandton, and hence we're chatting because it's so relevant to sort of our footprint. But are you finding any internationals being affected by this as well, or is it most of the victims local users of all these different apps?
Yes. Oh, we've picked up quite a lot of those. So of the clients that I'm assisting, there's about five, if not six of them who are not South African citizens, who were only visiting or who were perhaps who are here for work, maybe for a year or so. So there was a gentleman who was from Brazil. He's a Brazilian national who was in South Africa for 2 years. He actually reached out. He was the first person to reach out to share his story about how his laptop was stolen from. So he met a guy on Grindr when he landed in South Africa. 2 weeks after he got to South Africa, this guy, they met at his hotel. This guy came in. So as the Brazilian guy went into the bathroom, when he got out of the shower in 5 minutes, his laptop was gone, his cell phone was gone, his wallet was gone. So this guy had stolen everything that he needed. He stole some of his clothes as well within that 5 minutes. So it has happened to a lot of guys who are not South African as well.
Well, I suppose the best piece of advice is to be cautious and to proceed with caution and stay safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you are in any sort of platform, any sort of social media or any sort of app or platform that connects people, this is probably just something, unfortunately, that we have to keep in the back of our mind when you engage or meet people that you are not familiar with. And Lerato Palakatsele, Human Rights Manager at Out LGBT Wellbeing, I thank you for making the time to be on the Santon Times Hour and for sharing this, I think, very important information with people.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I think that's probably a poignant interview to wrap it all up for a Human Rights Day week on the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8. And as always, available as a podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify. If you want to get in touch, you can email editor@santontimes.co.za or connect with us on social media at Santon Times. And visit the website, www.santontimes.co.za. And feel free to send through your comments, your questions, your thoughts, your inputs. All of those are welcome. Thank you to all our guests who were on the show this week and who made the time. And also, Vincenzo, thank you so much for coming in for a semi-long weekend? A long weekend, kind of. Oh, a long weekend light. Okay, I'm with you. And then thank you to the Santon Times team as well as everyone at Mix 93.8. And of course to you. Thank you for listening. And let's connect again next week.
That's it for this week.
Thanks for listening to the Santon Times Hour. And if you enjoyed it, be sure to share it.